Potash strike leads to slick runways, explanation of Boeing 787 issues from Airbus, and a look at cabotage this week with Captain Chris of PlaneMadness.com on episode 26 of the Airplane Geeks podcast. Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 26. We are the Airplane Geeks. I'm Courtney. With me always is Max.
Hello, Court. Hello, everybody.
And joining us this episode is yet another Airplane Geek. Sorry, Chris, you've been dubbed. This is Captain Chris from the Plane Madness podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
I don't know if I'm a geek first or a pilot first.
Is there a difference?
Both together work well.
They work fine together. It's like a fine wine and a good dinner.
Outstanding.
Captain Chris runs, if you're not aware of him, you should be. You can check out his podcast at PlaneMadness.com. That's the Plane Madness podcast. If you're curious as to our sound problems, go to his website, listen to his podcast. It is Sound Nirvana, and then you can come back and listen to ours.
Well, thank you very much, although it's not necessary, but thank you.
Well, we do have quite a bit of news this week. What do you say we jump into it, gentlemen?
Let's get started.
First up on the news item, this from aeronews.net. FAA warns winter travel delays possible due to runway de-icer shortage. In a memo sent to airlines October 29th, the Federal Aviation Administration advised of potential disruptions in air travel during upcoming winter months due to a shortage of the chemical used for de-icing runways. Says the FAA, it is possible that runways may not be able to be maintained to the same level as previous years during winter storms. This entire issue has been created due to shortage of potash, which is a primary ingredient in runway de-icing fluid, and there was a strike that forced manufacturers to shut down production in Canada.
Yeah, there are just a couple of producers of this, I think, and Cryotech is one of the main producers of this de-icing fluid that uses potash. And they've told the FAA that they're significantly reducing the availability of this component this year.
Interesting.
This is the de-icing fluid for the runways, not necessarily the aircraft themselves. That is a glycol-based de-icer, and I don't believe that there's any change in that supply. In fact, I don't even think potash is involved in the manufacturing of that. This is the de-icing fluid for the runways themselves, which isn't necessarily always used. If you'll hear chemical de-icing, those of you pilots who hear it on the ATIS, this is the de-icing that they're using. Sometimes they don't use it at all. Sometimes they use sand. So this doesn't mean that runways will be closed. It just means at some of the higher volume airports, the de-icing fluid may not necessarily be as useful.
Well, you know, I was just looking here where it says that Cryotech estimated that this year's production of this stuff was going to be only at 2 or 3 million gallons, which was offset from last year's of 9 million gallons. So, you know, they're talking about quite a significant reduction here in the amount of this product. Whether or not it's going to affect us, like I said earlier when we were talking, is a question. I would pay special attention to places like O'Hare or JFK and see what happens, but who knows?
Now, as pilots, runway ice is, it sounds like it must be significantly more of an issue on landing than on takeoff. Is that right?
You know, it's always an issue. typically, you know, they're going to plow the runway and, from what I understand is they plow it and then they apply this fluid on, after that to go after the underlying ice that has accumulated on top of the, on top of the cement. So, and also to offset the development or the new development, of ice until they have to plow it again. But in terms of how it affects everything, landing on ice or taking off on ice, either way, I would rather not do either. But I would have to say, though, probably landing would be a little bit more, especially in a crosswind.
The article mentions that this will triple the price of this de-icing fluid, which is certainly a cost increase for the airports. I would imagine they, with the agreements they have with the airlines, would be too easy to pass that cost on directly, but we'll see. But if this winter is any indication, looks, or if at least the first several weeks of this winter is any indication, this may be a tough winter. My concern, O'Hare, not so much. I got to be honest with you, Chris. Midway is not a place I'd like to be without de-icing, runaway de-icing fluid and snow. And for some reason, Cleveland seems to be an area. Of course, they get all that lake effect snow, but it almost seems like once a year I hear about an airplane off the runway in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay, moving into our next story. Airbus and Turkey sign A350 cooperation agreement. Turkish Aerospace Industries, TUSAS, and European aircraft manufacturer Airbus signed a deal worth $500 million in U.S. dollars on Thursday for TUSAS to produce airplane parts. The Airbus A350 is a new type of commercial airliner. The first flight of the plane is scheduled for 2012, says Efir. He is the CEO of TUSAS. They will be, looks like they'll be producing at least part of the components for the aircraft for the A350.
Yeah, the A350 has got kind of an interesting history. I mean, originally Airbus had offered the A350 as an alternative, or not really an alternative, but the development of the A330, the next sort of the next generation. And when they described the specifications of the A350 to the airlines, it kind of was met with a sort of resounding thud. And compared to the 787, certainly, it really didn't go as far as the airlines were hoping for a next-generation airframe.
This was before the A380 was put into service. The 787 program had been launched, and it almost seemed like Airbus just kind of said, yeah, but we got the A350. Hello, don't forget about us. Now, with everything that seems to be going on with the 787 delays, which we'll talk about here in a bit, this A350 program seems to be raising a few more eyebrows.
Yeah, the A350 turned into the A350 XWB for extra wide body. And I checked the Airbus site, and they show firm orders for 447 aircraft to this point from 27 different customers. The biggest buyers being Qatar with 80 and Emirates with 70 aircraft.
I'm looking at I'm seeing here that it's like Etihad is now signed. If I'm saying that right, they signed for 25 back in July.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of interest in the A350 from the Middle East. But, you know, there's some support, you know, more broadly, some African airlines, even some Asian airlines. Finnair has got orders for 11 firm aircraft. Singapore Airlines for 20. U.S. Airways even for 22 aircraft. So I think there's definitely a market for, and some interest in a market for this size airplane. The 787 kind of stole the early thunder on this size class, but you know as that aircraft is delayed, it gives Airbus more time to develop the A350.
What's interesting too about it is when you look at the amount of experience on composite work, either from Airbus or Boeing. Obviously, Airbus takes the cake, obviously, because Boeing has just kind of entered into the fray with the 787. And as you can see, they've got a lot of problems and they're dealing with that. So, you know, a lot of people, a lot of airlines at this point may not be wanting to put all their eggs in the Boeing basket, so to speak, when it comes to composites.
Okay, moving on to our next story. Along the same lines, this from Flight Global Blogs. Airbus Dreamliner dossier revealed. I know that sounds like an oxymoron. Let me explain. In a stunning, candid critique of its chief competitor, Airbus has crafted a comprehensive competitive analysis that touches on nearly every aspect of the troubled 787 program, gleaned from Boeing proprietary data and an embedded network of sources from inside the Dreamliner's global supply chain. It was compiled by the Airbus head of engineering intelligence, Burkhard Domke. It was presented internally on October 20th. The presentation examines key design, weight, engine certification, production, and schedule issues facing Boeing 787. The most interesting information is that there are 7 slides labeled Boeing proprietary.
Yeah, this is an amazing document. On those 7 pages, it looks like Airbus has taken the original Boeing proprietary or marked proprietary document and copied them into this presentation. Certainly, that raises some issues, but not necessarily that Airbus has done something wrong. We don't know how Airbus obtained these. We don't know if they are truly proprietary. You know, just because a document is labeled proprietary doesn't necessarily mean that it's considered proprietary from a legal standpoint. For example, if your company labels every single document it produces as proprietary, then you weaken the meaning of proprietary, and it's much less likely to hold up in a courtroom as actually being proprietary. So we don't know the background on that, but despite that, the appearance is that Airbus has got a hold of something that Boeing probably doesn't want out there.
You know, and if you read through the 46-page document, which a lot of it are graphs and pictures, it's actually a very easy read. But if you get to page 46, it is the Airbus disclaimer that says, "This document and all information contained herein is the sole proprietary of Airbus."
Yet here it is out on the internet.
Which, okay, and this is what, kind of like a double leak, right? So somebody from Boeing leaked these documents, and somehow somebody from Airbus got them, and they presented them, and then that presentation has been leaked to, well, us.
You kind of wonder what all the motivations are in all of those steps. You know, certainly this thing is, you know, suggests that Boeing has, you know, got a number of serious or significant issues to deal with to get the 787 in order. But when you think about it, what harm comes to Airbus by having this out in the wild, as it were? It just makes Boeing look bad. It doesn't really hurt Airbus.
A couple of the issues that were raised by Airbus on the 787 throughout the presentation. The first one that I saw really piqued my interest here. Airbus says low-wage, trained, on-the-job workers that have no previous aerospace experience, and that's the end of the quote, have exacerbated the situation with the supply chain.
It's an interesting comment. Someone's taking a dig at someone, but whether or not it really represents an issue is kind of hard to tell. It reads more like a sort of political statement than it does a, you know, statement of fact and consequence. I don't know. You know, as an internal document, if you can assume that this was only originally meant to be an internal Airbus document, certain elements of it, including that one, sound kind of weak. I mean, if I was tasked with providing a competitive assessment, you know, for my boss of a competitor based on, you know, legitimately obtained information, I think I would want to make, you know, more definitive conclusions than just, you know, their workforce, nah, they haven't really done this kind of work before. I mean, it's a comment. It's not really an actionable, you know, report of fact. It just reads funny.
A couple of other issues that Airbus noted to be a problem with the 787 program. They said using a Boeing proprietary chart with additional labeling, Airbus believes Dreamliner 1 has gained 21,000 pounds since firm configuration. That is significant. They also believe that the GE Gen X1 and Rolls-Royce Trent engines have missed specific fuel consumption targets by 2-4%.
That's very significant.
Now, what struck me about that, Max and Chris, is that wouldn't Airbus know? I mean, aren't they using those engines on their A350?
Well, I was going to say that I think the entire genesis of this report was geared towards the benefit of the A350.
Except for the engine remark. That's why it kind of stuck out to me.
No, I mean, in furthering the development, they, you know, the A350 and not wanting to make the same mistakes as you know, have been made on the 777. So I think that was the inspiration for probably behind this.
The entire article is worth a read. And of course, for those who consider themselves true airplane geeks, you're going to want to take a look at this document. They have a link on the Flight Blogger website. You can check that out in the show notes. We'll also provide a link to the document. It's fascinating stuff. A lot of, like I said, a lot of charts, really a lot is. Of graphs, and it's a very easy read. Some of it was over my head, but that I get used to that very easily. It happens a lot.
It is a fascinating read. And maybe one final comment on this topic is that apparently and interestingly enough, Airbus hasn't issued a takedown order. I mean, if this was truly a proprietary document that they wanted to protect, even though it had gotten out there, you know, I think from a legal standpoint, you would want to issue a takedown order so that this would be pulled from the website. But apparently that hasn't happened because last time I checked, it's still out there.
Okay, moving into the next story. This from the Times Online. U.S. aviation industry needs foreign cash, Barack Obama told. Foreign ownership restrictions in the American airline industry should be dumped so that overseas investors can inject capital into the struggling aviation market, Barack Obama was told yesterday. America fiercely protects its airline business, and in addition to ownership, it also blocks foreign carriers from competing on many domestic routes, such as New York to Washington, says Mr. Bisignani, who is the gentleman who made the suggestion to Barack Obama. To build a sustainable future, airlines need the same management tools that other businesses take for granted, market access and access to capital. We are confident that government, airlines, and labor can work together to remove this arcane restrictions and allow the industry to reach its full global potential. There's your political statement, Max.
Yeah. Well, the foreign ownership content is limited to 25%, right? That's the current restriction?
Voting, right? I believe they can... I'm kind of talking out of my knowledge area, but I believe you can have foreign ownership of up to 49%, but only a 25% voting stake.
Voting. And does it matter? I mean, why 25%? Why not 49%?
Well, you know, there's two things really going on in this article. You know, one, what it sounds like this... Bisignani is calling for is relaxing those restrictions. You know, we're talking about capital ownership, a foreign airline owning a U.S. airline. Then there's mention of cabotage, and that is an entirely different, it should be kept as an entirely different issue. Let me put it that way. And we have another article that talks a little bit more about cabotage, and that's basically allowing a foreign carrier to fly intra-U.S. routes. So Air France could fly New York to Washington, and they could take New York citizens, pick them up in New York, and drop them off in Washington. Right now, they cannot do that.
Yeah. In fact, if I could interject something real quick, Kurt, I know that, or at least they were, I think British Airways was flying an airplane empty at 747 into San Diego, I think from Texas. They would fly into the U.S., land in Texas, and then fly it empty to observe the local rules that we have here in the States, and then pick up a load in San Diego and fly back overseas. So you have an empty 747 coming in on final approach into San Diego.
Oh, that's smart.
Hey, even a full one coming into final approach into San Diego would be pretty
exactly
cool to watch.
What I was, maybe they just can't make it.
Well, I'd rather be empty than full going into San Diego with a 7-4, but you know, that's just me.
I believe that, you know, a carrier can fly and I'm going to just pick a random one. But if Emirates wants to fly Dubai to Los Angeles, they can fly to New York and then on to Los Angeles. They can have New York passengers and they can have Los Angeles passengers. They cannot pick up people in New York and take them to LA.
Correct.
That is cabotage. But you can have both on the
Correct.
Airplane first. You'll have half of them off. The airplane's half empty. If continues on to LA, I believe. And again, it gets different when you're talking about the different countries, and because some have certain rights and others don't. So, to get back to the original topic, you know, there are two issues. One is foreign ownership in airlines exceeding the either 25 or 49%. as Max was alluding to. And then the second issue, which is entirely different, is cabotage.
I guess I tend to be sort of a free market kind of guy. And, you know, I understand everyone's desire to try to protect their own, you know, domestic airline industry. But, you know, I mean, we've already sort of started to chip away at that kind of thing with, you know, airline alliances and code sharing. And, you know, these kind of distinctions start to blur. And I'm, you know, I find myself starting to wonder if a restriction on equity ownership of 25% is sort of a remnant of issues in the past that are not quite as relevant as they used to be.
It's a compelling issue, and it's a bit of an emotional issue.
Sure.
Because you're trying to further the cause here locally for businesses in the United States to take advantage of the audience in terms of the customer base, and not let somebody else come in from another country and do that. But at the same time, if you look at, you know, it seems like the way that the planet is going, it seems to be becoming more and more of a global economy.
Right.
And then you've got Richard Branson coming in with Virgin America, and he was able to do it, and, you know, still owning 25%. I'm wondering if Richard Branson and Mr. Bisignani here may have gone to prom together on this issue. And maybe Mr. Bisignani is a kind of a mouthpiece for Branson and people like him who want to come in and take advantage of the markets over here and be able to do it cheaper.
As you start getting into the foreign ownership laws and increasing them, you know, you've got a lot of airlines that are basically owned by governments. And since, you know, it's really the only industry that touches everything, being as a global industry as it is, you know, I could see some hesitation to drop all restrictions. I'm not saying it's an educated opinion on my part. I just, all I'm saying is I think there's more to look into before, you know, we just drop it. But once you start getting to, you know, once you exceed 49% ownership, an airline, say you have 51%, Air France is 51% in a U.S. airline, they can...
That's controlling interest.
That's a controlling interest.
Sure.
So those are some issues. You can put in restrictions to make sure that you're protected, but who flies those airplanes? And that's where we start sneaking into cabotage. You know, that's where the two start to come together, because I think the big issue on this, and I'm not a huge labor guy, but labor is the big issue in this, because the U.S. airline industry, in my opinion, is held up to a much higher standard in labor laws, in just how they operate business.
A lot of things.
Yeah, on a lot of things. You know, reference what Qantas was able to do in, I believe it was L.A. with several years ago. They put up a billboard that said, yeah, our flight attendants are better looking than United's. And they are. Because because they don't have the same labor laws that we do. You can't do that in the United States. Have you, Chris, I know you've seen some of the South African crews come over and JAL and some of those. You know, when you start getting out to those countries, it's amazing. They walk in line. A lot of the crews still bow to the captains in Japan.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can't even walk past a captain in Japan because it's considered rude. You can't enter the airplane before the captain because that's considered rude. Yeah, it's exactly.
But it illustrates the issue that, you know, oh, I'm sorry, you've exceeded a weight limit. Is it a safety issue? No, just, you know, we may not sell as many tickets because we think that you're fat, you're fired. And you cannot do that in the U.S., in age limit. You cannot do that in the U.S. So the playing field is not level.
You know, the one thing I'm going to say on this court is that the international terminal is always much more interesting for exactly what you're talking about. I it's a very personal thing for me. If I let my guard down here and just kind of, you know, say it the way I want to say it, I don't agree with it at all. I think that that we should reserve that business for our people here in this country, our taxpayers and our workers, and that's where I stand on it. I think that going towards a global economy, and sure, you may be able to bring in more solutions if you open things up, but that is only in the temporary. And once you've opened it up, it's going to be equally as it's going to be hard to close it. And I think that we ought to learn from our own mistakes, and I think we ought to correct them.
There is no other country or region in the world that even rivals the U.S. domestic airline industry. So how is this even fair for the U.S. to open up and say, you know, just to give an extreme example, to stick with the South African Airlines, you can come in and fly anywhere in the U.S., pick up whoever you want. And in turn, we have to be able to pick up and fly passengers within South Africa. It doesn't make sense. Even if you get to what I would consider the largest market, second to the U.S. in kind of a whole governed-ish area, and that would be Europe and the European Union, it still pales in comparison to what is within the United States. So I don't understand the benefit to the U.S. even allowing this.
Well, exactly. They'll sell it as being a source of solution for problems that we ought to be fixing ourselves. And for everybody else that wants to come in and do it, it's an economic boom to be able to service this part of the world, our country, like you're saying, in the amount of business that we have for airline travel compared to the rest of the world.
Now, the U.S. State Department has recently stated its position on cabotage. Right, Court?
Yes. This from Air Transport World in their daily news. A U.S. EU open aviation area that would include a relaxation of U.S. foreign ownership and control restrictions, quote, is not going to happen in the near term, says U.S. Department of State Deputy Assistant Secretary for Transportation Affairs, John Byerly. How would you like to have that title in your email signature?
It's a mouthful.
Is that not just the longest title? U.S. Department of State Deputy Assistant Secretary for Transportation Affairs. He also added,
his comments are short and to the point. Yeah,
they are, and I appreciate them. He also says, and this is a quote, "I don't see any changes coming to cabotage." For example,
they went right to Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's going to be at the top of the command chain.
Exactly.
So it remains to be seen.
Okay, moving into our last story real quickly before we get into the main topic with Chris. This from the USA Today. Three airlines dropped self-reporting safety program. Three large airlines have abandoned a safety program credited with helping to lower accident rates, prompting criticism of the airlines and unions by safety advocates and government regulators. American Airlines, Delta Airlines, and Comair have dropped programs that encourage pilots to come forward and report their own mistakes without fear of being punished, known as the Aviation Safety Action Program. The program has helped airlines and regulators uncover scores of potentially dangerous situations and make fixes before they cause crashes. Just a little bit more. I did fly under this program before I left the airlines several years ago. And for those of you who are familiar with the NASA program, the Aviation Safety Reporting Program, which has been in effect for quite some time.
For a long time.
This is the ASAP programs that they're talking about are kind of synonymous to a company-run version of these in coordination with the FAA. The thought process behind them is if you're in a situation that is unsafe, whether or not you put yourself into it, self-disclosure in the interests of preventing the problem again is what we're looking for, not necessarily punishment. So if you self-disclose what happens, then we won't punish you unless it was malicious or in overt, whatever the limitations of the programs are. And if you kind of think about it, you know, this is a very cooperative process between the pilots who are obviously represented by the unions, the airlines, who kind of deal out any punishment that may have occurred outside the program, and the FAA, who are, of course, focused on safety. Without this, typically what happens is, if something happens, you just keep your mouth shut.
And nobody learns anything.
The article does go on to point out some of the reasons that these programs have gone away. American was the first to start the ASAP program 14 years ago, suspended its program in October after talks with the Allied Pilots Association broke down. So here's a situation where negotiations between the union and the company have affected a safety program.
My understanding of it was that the union's claims were that these reports were not being, they were not remaining confidential. And disciplinary actions from the companies were coming at the pilots as a result of filing the reports. But I can't confirm that.
If that is what was happening, yeah, then there's, you know, I mean, no doubt in my mind that the, you know, pilots and others who might provide information under this program would just scream bloody murder. I mean, you know, this industry is sort of based on, you know, safety and, you know, maintaining safety and promoting safety. And, you know, you don't want to weaken that, because confidentiality is breached in a program like this. This is something to be really protected in my eyes.
If you look at the bottom of the article, it even says, that according to the APA safety chief, the program broke down because of a lack of trust. So there you have it, at least in American's case.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know the other two, but I would assume it says Delta halted its program in November 2006 over disagreements with the Airline Pilots Association. And then Comair ended it shortly thereafter, I think about a year after. So how many other airlines are participating in ASAP?
Well, it's a pretty common program. I don't know of any that are still not. So, you know, I think it caught on across the industry, and everybody saw the benefits of having it, and so everybody wanted it.
Is it primarily a U.S. Focused kind of a program? Do you know, Chris?
You know, it started, like Court said, it has its origins in the NASA program, and then, you know, a lot of what 121 is in terms of its regulatory structure and whatnot, is that the FAA is a much more active participant at the airline level in terms of individually managing each airline. So consequently, when an airline wanted an ASAP program, they would have to actually initiate that with the FAA individually. And so there wasn't like some kind of a cookie cutter thing, you know, across the industry. Okay, you want to join in? Here you go. It was specifically tailored for the airline that, that, you know, went to the FAA requesting it, is my understanding.
Okay.
So even though everybody's got them, they're, you know, they're kind of unique at every carrier.
Okay, moving into our main topic then, and again, we're talking with Captain Chris. He is the creator, editor, author, producer, everything else. I think he gets his own drinks of the Plane Madness podcast. Chris, again, thanks for joining us.
I just sweep the floors, man. That's the studio's dusty most of the time, and somebody's got to clean it up.
So, hey, Chris, and I guess this is more of a meta cast in that Max and I, with the new media meetups, the things that we really kind of like to do is just kind of bring the rest of the community together, of course, of which you are considered a leader in. So just kind of tell us about your podcast, kind of how you started it, what you wanted to achieve, and what you have achieved with it.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate all those kind words. And it all started one night in a hotel room in some city somewhere. You know, it was a way to occupy overnights constructively. As you know, being an airline pilot, you're on the road quite a bit. You're gone from home. You know, I'd like to say probably 6 months out of the year, you're in a different hotel room somewhere. So for me, the genesis for PlaneMadness.com was just to have a creative outlet that I could really just, hey, I want to share something that's cool, not in the sense of the website itself, but if I see something out on the internet, like a video or something like that, I want, you know, I think it's really cool. Obviously, other people are going to think it's pretty neat, or something that has to do with aviation that I want to share. So that was kind of the genesis of it, and it just started to grow, and it's been in existence now for about a year and a half. And it's grown to be pretty big, just in terms of the amount of posts that I've made. I look at it and I'm like, boy, did I actually make all those posts? I must have had a lot of time. And then that was kind of like at the same time that the whole, blogging thing came along, and then the whole podcasting thing kind of, was the blogging thing was a segue into podcasting. And so I just said, hey, well, you know what? I tend to just be a very creative person in general. And for me, it's an outlet. So that's kind of why it's there.
Yeah. And that tends to be the case. I think blogging really is the gateway drug to podcasting. That's what brought us in. Looking at your website here, Chris, just to give our listeners an idea of some of the things you do. It is a blog as well as a podcast, a repository, if that's the right word. Your latest episode is episode 45, The Life of a Blimp Pilot. How can that not be fascinating?
Yeah, because speaking for myself only, I didn't know anything about flying blimps. I don't have a lighter than air. I've never been up in a hot air balloon even. So for me, it was like, wow, this is a doorway into what it's like to fly blimps. And then once we started talking, in this particular episode number 45 with, Mitch Johnson, who was the fellow that I interviewed for it, I started learning about what your life is actually like when you fly a blimp for a living. And, again, if you're me, you would look up in the sky and see a blimp and you'd think, okay, well, it took off and now it's going to go land. A lot of times what these blimps are doing is they're covering vast amounts of distances, en route to go someplace for the next, appearance or whatever they have scheduled. So you're like, for instance, this particular fellow that I interviewed, he's on the road 365 days a year.
Yeah, that was fascinating. He doesn't go home.
He doesn't go home.
Right.
He doesn't go home. He's got two suitcases and he doesn't do it anymore. But the fact is that when he was doing it, it's 100% dedication. If you're not advertising at a specific location, you're going to a location to advertise. It was quite intriguing to hear what it was like.
I would like to add, Chris, that, in the category of just wow factor, I don't think I've been as wowed by a blog post on an aviation website that had nothing to do with aviation as these crane pictures you have.
Oh, those are amazing.
Isn't that cool?
That is amazing. Now, for our listeners, and it's very tough to kind of describe what's going on here, so you're going to have to go to planemadness.com. It's his November 30th post. A crane uses its arm, and it's a crane, right? That's what you call these, or is it a backhoe, or
it's I'd have to call my buddy who's in construction, but it's a big caterpillar with a big arm, and instead of having a bucket, it's got a plate attachment that it's like a small claw type thing.
You gotta check this out.
It climbs this tower. This vertical pole.
It uses, now this tower is specially designed to, I guess, allow the tracks to fit in and create traction, as well as this rigged bucket to climb up. But, not to get too far into a non-aviation thing, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen with tracks.
Now do you see why planemadness.com exists?
Oh, man.
It's simple to share. I love it. Really cool stuff. From boring overnights. No, but yeah, when I got these, I get this stuff in the email, and it's like the bigger the website gets, the weirder the stuff is that comes into the email inbox. But really what you could kind of compare this to is a crab crawling up the face of a rock vertically. What this caterpillar does is there's this, like Court was saying, there's this specially designed tower that's, I don't know, probably 9 or 10 stories high. And it's just climbing it vertically with its claw. I mean, that's the best way I could say it. I don't know if you guys got a different way of.
No, that's it.
Yeah. And then nothing to do with aviation.
This really is amazing. But, you know, it's also, it's an entirely characteristic of the work Chris does. Now, I mean, typically it's aviation related, but, you know, that's one of the things that drew me to your site, Chris, you know, in the beginning, is that you just have a way of finding really interesting things, again, mostly aviation related. And it's entertaining, and it's different each time. And whether it's, you know, some really cool videos. I'd never seen a radio controlled seaplane, you know, before. That was amazing. Not only did it have a camera in the plane, but it had a chase radio control plane, right? That took video of the seaplane.
My basic rule is that if I'm not falling off my chair, I don't post it, because I know that everyone else that sees it will probably fall off their chair if I can be used as any kind of a gauge. And so, yeah, I try to keep stuff that has to do with aviation, but oftentimes it varies. And then if it's, you know, especially interesting, then it's something I'll bring up in the podcast. And that was kind of the genesis of the podcast, is just wanting to say, hey, look, you guys really got to check this out. This is really interesting. And then, oh, I guess, you know, it just kind of proved as a segue into all these other things that I now talk about on the podcast. So it's fun.
How about the future? Do you have some directions that you're looking to take the podcast or the website?
Well, you know, what's funny is I see all this, you know, all my peers around me that are also doing this, much like you guys. And you know, the bar is being raised across the board here. And so it's a genesis, you know, by you guys. And it's a genesis for me in terms of creative inspiration. So it's funny. My mind is pulling me in different directions with where to go with the site. But boy, just give me a handheld voice recorder and put me somewhere really cool or neat. And, you know, I love to do like soundscaping type stuff right from the scene, or, you know, talk to people that you know, I didn't think I could get interviews with. You know, I went to AOPA, and next thing I know, I'm talking with Phil Boyer, and just, you know, like to do, more of that kind of thing. And you know, see where it goes. It's an infant, so to speak, even though it's a year and a half old at this point. But in terms of where I want it to go and what I want to do with it, it's still in its infancy. So I appreciate, you know, all the good words about it. I really do. Thank you.
Chris, you mentioned, you know, the talk of other podcasts, and where I've seen in different communities, it's been, they're considered competition. And not here at all. And I love that.
Right.
This truly is the definition of a community in the aviation community. You know, ever since we started doing this, you know, the talk on Twitter, you know, now Max, we're having daily name the airplane games.
Yeah,
you know,
fantastic.
My transponder, just the folks that we've had on the new media meetups, Chris, yourself. That's something that I guess I didn't entirely expect with the podcast.
Yeah, unexpected, right.
Well, you know, we're also in the infancy of a new media delivery format, and we all know that. And the more that we can help each other out, the better. And what's promising is what's happening around us in terms of what the manufacturers are doing. If you look at you know, the car segment, there's a couple of car manufacturers. I think it was BMW and Mercedes, of course, who are coming out with the technology in the cars, I believe, next year to get streaming radio in the car.
Mm.
So, you know, it's there, it's what the people want. And I think that's really what sets it apart from traditional media and terrestrial radio, is that you have the ability to get what you want when you want with podcasts. And you don't get that with regular television. You don't get that on the radio. And that's what sets it apart. And I think that's what's going to facilitate its future growth.
Certainly.
Really.
And, you know, really, when you get down into what podcasts are and what the benefits of podcasting is over, you know, a traditional blog, is you have to invest time, not just in creating one, but to listen to one. And, you know, to kind of embrace that, look, it's going to take people more to sit down and listen to a podcast, but the people that do are into it. I mean, you know, we're talking, you know, just fantastic fans.
Yeah, really dedicated.
Yeah, but what's cool about it is that you don't even really have to sit down. Like today I was out in my garage detailing a motorcycle all day, and I had you guys on my iPod, which was pumping the sound out to a pair of speakers. So I could just sit there and listen. You know, or I do the same thing, but I, you know, in the car with the, through the stereo in the car. And that's what's really cool is the portability and of just what you can do with an MP3 player and how you can pump that sound out in different ways.
Well, Chris, I know you're familiar with the podcast, and I know that you're expecting, some word associations, so we don't want to disappoint.
No, and I don't want to disappoint either. I'm going to the best I can.
Don't need to explain the rules. Max and I each have three. Are you ready to get started?
Oh yeah, I'm absolutely. Go for it.
Okay, my first is two words: radio control.
Fascinating, fun, free, fun, cheap.
I love when what you did previously with the video from your RC plane.
Oh yeah, yeah. I went down to Walmart and spent $98 on a crappy camera and duct taped it to an RC plane and flew down the middle of the street and got it on the computer and was just like, you know, it's almost like I flew a full size airplane down the middle of the street.
It was very cool. You know, you even had a pilot in that plane, as I recall.
Yeah. But you know, RC is just, you know, I started doing it when I was 10 years old because I couldn't, you know, I just wasn't able to get into full size airplanes and I just keep doing it.
Lots of fun.
Okay, my first word, Chris, a little bit unorthodox, but it'll work. Twitter.
Love it. What do you say about Twitter? Twitter is instant messaging for the masses on a social networking level. And it just continues to grow as more and more companies develop the surrounding technology. I think it's here to stay. Again, it goes back to portability. You know, you can do it on your phone. You can do it on your computer.
Certainly, and that was all an excuse to pitch kind of what has been happening on Twitter with the aviation community. So I apologize that you were used as my pawn.
No, no, it's exploded.
It really has.
It really has.
In fact, just today, I went and created a Twitter groups for aviators. I immediately got the question, what's it for? And I don't know. I really don't know. I have no idea. But I just figured we needed one.
But it's there.
But it's there.
My wife doesn't get
Neither
it.
Neither does mine.
Why do they do that? Oh, because your podcast.
It's hard to explain. Yeah. You sort of have to do it, and then the light bulb goes off.
You know, it never went off for me until I went to a conference. And while I was at their conference, they said, you know, everybody give out your Twitter names. Here's the hashtag that you use while you're at the conference. And it was everywhere. And the people you met at the conference, you stayed with. And then it clicked. So if you're not involved with Twitter, go to twitter.com. Twitter ID is Miller22. You'll know it. Go ahead and follow that. Max is Max Flight. Chris, did you want to give yours?
Yeah, it's just Plain Madness.
And then from us, at least, you can join the rest of the aviation community and just kind of take place in, you know, the this is horrible. I forget who does it, but the name the plane game that I just have a blast with.
Oh, AirPigs.
Yeah, AirPigs. Oh, gosh, that's horrible. Yep. Who's launching his site?
AirPigs with a Z. A Z is in Zulu. You got it.
Not to get too far off topic, but if you're not on Twitter, please go check it out. Make sure you bring us in. We'll kind of hold your hand and make sure that you get introduced to the rest of the community.
It's really easy.
There's nothing
to
it.
Yeah, it very is. Yeah. Okay, Chris, my next word is simple, just speed.
Love it. I'm just telling you what comes to mind. First thing that comes to mind for me with speed, just absolutely love it. I'm kind of a speed freak. A junkie, if you will, for speed. In fact, the bike that I was detailing is a CBR 1000. And yeah, here I am, kind of getting to be an old guy, but still riding a sport bike. And you know, it's another thing my wife doesn't get, but at least she doesn't have a problem with it. Yeah, I don't know what to say about speed except that it's good. Speed is good.
Okay, my next word. Composites.
New age. The future. Keep the plastic out of it. Let's stick with the resin and the carbon fiber stuff. But yeah, definitely where it's going. My question and my concern. Oh, go ahead, Max.
No, I was just a couple of years ago. I put together a little study from publicly available information, plotting the composites content of airliners, sort of model by model, year by year, and it was kind of an impressive trend line to see how the composite content of aircraft is increasing. It's definitely the way that it's going.
Yeah, and you know, even on the RC side of things, like the props that I run are all glass composite, glass filled resin composite, real heavy props. They don't break; they shatter.
Yes,
and that's kind of a concern of mine with regard to all composites in general. You know, in terms of how they fatigue, how they break down, and the differences between them and aluminum.
Yeah, different failure mode.
Absolutely. You know what you were saying earlier about the 787 was yeah. What do you do when a baggage cart runs into the side of the fuselage? What do you do? I mean, you're going to fix it like you'd fix a jet ski. I mean, it's you're going to have all these fractures throughout the whole area of the impact. And how do you know how deep those fractures go? How do you measure that? I know one of the things they're doing with regard to that on the 777 or the 787 was the access points that mechanics can actually get in there and look at things are just everywhere.
Okay, my third word, and we sort of covered this a little bit, but my word is just simply podcasting.
Podcasting, new age radio without antennas. Yeah, in a nutshell, that's what we have. Media at will, when you want, how you want it, where you want it.
I basically don't listen to the radio any longer. Whole life is just, content that I assemble from podcasts and, audio sources, and, I'm the director.
And the other thing is, if I do listen to radio, I listen to Flightline Internet Radio, listen to Pandora. I listen to Pandora Internet Radio. What's different about something like, not to give a plug out to Pandora, but they've really seized on what we all want in a traditional sense, because if you look at traditional radio, you don't know what you're going to get. You know what station you can go to. And I find myself listening to Pandora a little bit more and more now, in addition to Flightline Internet Radio as well. So I think it's where it's all going. It's the content you want, when you want it, and where you want it.
Yeah, I agree. That's very compelling.
Okay, my last word, Chris, and should be no surprise, but I do want to clarify. The word is Airplane Geeks, but Airplane Geeks, the people, not the podcast.
Oh, really cool, guys. We hang out with you guys any time of the day or night. Tell hangar stories, drink some good adult beverages, and just have a good time.
Outstanding.
Absolutely. I feel like I know you, although I've never even met either one of you guys in person. So there you go. And look at how great we all get along.
Well, it's different when I turn off the mic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The blowout after show right before we got this thing going. Gosh, I can't believe you said that. No, you guys are really cool. I think what you're doing is fantastic. And I really enjoy the show. And yeah, like I said, you guys are raising the bar.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's Captain Chris. Again, thank you so much. You can check out his podcast. In fact, please do. My only request is that when you do, you don't forget that we're here, because this is fantastic stuff. You can find it at plainmadness.com. Don't make the same mistake I did. There's only one D in madness. So go to plainmadness.com. Check out his podcast and the blog.
And it's P-L-A-N-E. P-L-A-N-E. Like as opposed to E-L. Yeah.
That Chris, thank you once again.
Hey, thank you. Pleasure is all mine, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Thanks again to Captain Chris, and now we'll move on to Max's pick of the week.
Yeah, my pick this week is a blog called Simplifying. It's at simplifying.com. That's SimpliFlying. Now, this is a blog about airlines, but it really tries to differentiate itself from all those other blogs about airlines by focusing on airline branding, what they do well, and and what they don't do so well. Here's some sort of examples of some of the recent posts. The latest post, at least at this time, is a video interview with Professor John Hansman of MIT about the future of the airline business. He's the director of the International Center for Air Transportation, and he feels airlines need to undergo some really radical changes to survive. Another recent posting was why a Qantas and British Airways merger is good, and why a Qantas and Cathay Pacific merger would be even better. Another recent example was a look at airline online communities, particularly Virgin America's recent effort to join Web 2.0, if you will. They're doing some really good things, but how can they leverage what they've got to be something even better? The author of Simplifying is a guy who, he lives in Boston now. He was born in New Delhi, and he spent a lot of time growing up in Singapore. So as a youngster, he really traveled extensively, and that started his love affair with the airlines. Besides all that, it's really a technically an outstandingly well-produced blog, I think. I like it a lot, and I recommend it this week as my pick.
You know, Max, I have to admit that I was a little bit embarrassed when I saw this blog and realized I had never seen this before. This is professional-grade stuff. I'm gonna butcher his name, and I apologize, but Shashank Nijam, perhaps.
It looks like that, yeah.
Really, what you're gonna get here, and I know we've had several listeners throughout a couple emails suggest a more international look on aviation, which I have to admit I'm not as well versed in the international side as I am the U.S. domestic side of aviation. This guy is.
Right, exactly.
And he would be a perfect guest. Hopefully we can talk to him sometime on the podcast. But make sure you check out the website, simplifying.com. It's even got a fascinating design.
It's a beautiful website. It really is.
Okay, moving on into a couple user emails that we did get this week. One from Merrill. I'll go ahead and read it. He says, I love your show. The only thing wrong is that I get a lot of pushback from my wife because I walk around the house all the time with earbuds in my ear listening to you guys, and for some strange reason, this bugs her. Well, Merrill, she's crazy.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree on that. By no means, we appreciate the listenership, but by no means affect your marriage. Merrill ends with keep up the good work. He also suggests, he asks a question. He says, I hope one of the major publications will publish an article on you guys, referring to the podcasting community and other podcasts. He says, this is something we have to get out. It's one of the most habit-forming things I've encountered. Once he's read his magazines, and he reads them almost instantaneously, how does he get his flying fix the other 28 days of the month? The answer is now by using podcasts. And he hopes other aviators and people interested in flying will discover this new media. I know there are several that that may not be known. Of course, Captain Chris's is one. We do have several others. Max, where's the best place to go? I think somebody else has asked you this question in the last week. Where's the best place to go if somebody's looking for aviation podcasts?
Ooh, I get to plug myself. If you go to my 30,000feet.com website and click on the blog page, I've got, I don't know how many. Probably 30, maybe even 40 aviation podcasts listed there, every one that I can think of. For some of the favorites, you'll be able to see excerpts from the last two or three episodes, and beyond that is just a general list with descriptions of all the others. So if you're on the hunt for aviation podcasts, that's a good place to go. It's 30,000feet.com, and that's 30,000 feet is spelled out in words.
Thanks. The second email, this comes from Chris. He says, love the podcast. Thank you, Chris. He listened with interest to our discussion about the ruling in Canada about one passenger, one fare. I think the missing piece here that the media has not been covering is that this decision by the Canadian Transportation Agency was originally initiated because of people with disabilities who require an attendant to travel with them. Somehow obesity issues got rolled up into that decision. That's very interesting. He also says the same approach has been taken with Greyhound and Rail here in Canada, that the concept was that an individual whose disability cannot be accommodated safely by the crew should be able to travel with an attendant for the same cost. So he also says, thought I'd supply a little background on this. Keep up the great work, Chris. Thank you so much for clearing that up. Outside of that, if you would like to send us an email, please don't hesitate. You can send it to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And we will try to reply as quickly and as safely as we possibly can. TheGeeks@AirplaneGeeks.com. You can send us an email. Of course, as always, there's the website where all of our posts and show notes are. That's at AirplaneGeeks.com, where on the right side, you will find our aviation newsletter. Weekly, we send out the show notes, including all news stories that we covered, Max's pick of the week, and any of the news stories that we didn't have time to cover, we also include in that as well. So that's a good way to keep up with the aviation industry on a weekly basis. We also have our voicemail number. You can give us listener feedback by calling 812-757-4252. That'll ring straight to voicemail, and you can leave your comment there. And, of course, you can always record yourself on MP3 if you're so inclined. The quality tends to be a little bit better, and we'll get you on the podcast. And as always, and I'm sure Chris will agree, the best way you can support us is by telling your friends and spreading the word about the Airplane Geeks, Play Madness, the aviation community, and podcasting in general. So we do really appreciate you, listeners. We look forward to doing this for quite some time. Chris, do you have any grand words to leave us with?
Keep the blue side up. Unless you're doing aerobatics, then keep it down.
Yeah. Max, Chris, thank you both for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
And I'm always here. So.
Yeah, Max is always here.
I'm always here.
That's it for episode 26. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Join us next week as we discuss aviation on episode 27, the Airplane Geeks podcast. We'll see you guys.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.